And on the GNM Family Market phone line, our next guest, founder of The Classical, editor for Vice Sports, and just one of the best follows on Twitter for my money, David Roth. Welcome back to Downtown.
Hi, Rich. Thanks for having me, and thanks for saying that I'm good at Twitter. I've used that to replace any of the actual work I should be doing now. That's pretty much my whole thing.
Well, isn't that the whole purpose of Twitter?
As far as I can tell, yeah. I mean, if I haven't really totally detected a purpose, but that's the closest I've come.
Well, let's start with sports and then veer into some other things. You were talking on Vice today about baseball and about the Mets in particular. But to me, the best Mets story, because I look up to him, I envy him. Bartolo Colon may be the greatest thing that's ever happened in baseball.
He's the best. I was talking to my dad about him last night, and we were both remembering watching him pitch when he was young, like with the Indians and stuff like that. And there's, looking at the pictures of young Barto against this Barto, it's really difficult to see how they're the same guy. But he is, and it's beautiful, and there's like a whole, I don't know, there's all kinds of poetic lessons about getting old and eating the foods that you like in there, and I find it very inspiring.
Well, what else is it about the Mets that's caught your fancy?
I mean, I grew up as a Mets fan, so I'm super partisan and blindly, I've given a lot more of my emotional well-being to that team over the years than was smart, and it is the first time in, 10 years that I've really known that I was going to be watching a competitive team every time I watch them. I think they're fun to watch now. I mean, the pitching is amazing, but there's something about the way, the energy that they have as a team in terms of appearing to enjoy playing baseball. This is a low bar to set, but I have to, if you remember the 2009 Mets, then the fact that, the guys appear to high-five each other, they mean it, that suddenly is, it means a great deal. So, I mean, watching Cespedes hit types of home runs that I've not seen people hit before, sort of low line drives that the shortstop seems to have a play on, and then they come to rest 400 feet from home plate in left field somehow, is, I don't know. I'm still getting used to enjoying watching them. That's been the hardest part of it, but also the funnest.
We were talking about this a few minutes ago, the big emphasis now on PEDs, and by gosh, we're gonna sniff out that problem. Is part of this because baseball's going so well right now that it's okay to be tracking down these guys and kicking them out for a while?
I think that's a really good point. I mean, it does seem like kind of a luxury problem to have, that if the teams aren't making money and no one's watching the games, then this is the whole thing about, I've been thinking a lot about recently the 98 home run chase between McGuire and Sosa, and the extent to which, I think that in retrospect was extremely sketchy even at the time. And yet, baseball needed it. Everybody sort of needed it. And so everyone sort of agreed to look not the other way, but just to pay a lot more attention to the dingers until, they could afford to pay attention to, the rest of it. But yeah, I don't get the sense that there is any great passion among most fans where the PED stuff is concerned. Especially given that the things that people are getting suspended for now. I mean, if it's Chris Colabello and Dee Gordon, that's a lot different than suspending somebody that looks like, Lou Ferrigno. These guys are, those are things that they're taking for recovery or to, sort of do more prosaic things than, get real giant and hit the ball 470 feet.
David, what do you make of the new crop of young superstars that's infiltrated Major League Baseball? It seems like the league has gotten a lot younger and a lot more athletic really quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to sort of watch it all happening, too, because, it's not new that there suddenly are 22-year-olds that are as good as anybody in the league, but the extent to which we're getting seemingly a new one every year, that's like you barely get used to Mike Trout before there's Bryce Harper, before there's, Chris Bryant, and there are different sort of flavors of it. I mean, I think Harper's the one that, and Jose Fernandez on the Marlins are the ones that have the potential to really sort of change the tenor and tone of the game. But it really is just sort of, it's the same sort of good feeling that the NBA sort of has right now, I think, come the playoff time, where there's just like such a wealth of cool things to watch that, and, it sort of puts in perspective, years past where it has sort of seemed like this dreary march to the Cardinals winning a World Series or something like that. It really doesn't feel like that now.
David, of the major sports, which ones got themselves the most together right now from your perspective?
I mean, I'm biased because I was just writing about the NBA and then because I've been watching it so much. I think Major League Baseball, because it has that relative labor piece that the NFL and the NBA don't. I mean, the fact that, like, it's hard to imagine, seasons being interrupted again or, you know, lockouts or strikes. I mean, it's anything's possible, and obviously there's a lot of money in play. But baseball seems so much more stable, and yet I think that basketball right now is at the quality of play there is higher than I think it's been at any point in my lifetime. Just that, like, the Warriors and the Spurs are both so unique to watch in a way that, you know, it sort of puts in perspective all those years that we were, you know, the Kobe, Shaq, Lakers or whatever. I mean, it's like, that was fine, you know, but it's, I think you have to go back to, like, the Lakers and the Celtics in the 80s to see teams that were that evenly matched in those interesting, in that interesting a way, and then also that were, you know, good in such different ways.
Since we're talking,
I mean, baseball is stable, but basketball is really pretty great right now.
Since we're talking basketball, it would seem to, I can't let it pass to bring up the Kevin Durant situation, because even in the heat of some of the best playoff basketball the NBA has seen in recent years, the chatter is still about Kevin Durant's impending free agency. It doesn't seem,
wild, right?
Yeah, he's the anti-LeBron, but it seems like he's going to have an equitable amount of suitors, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, it is also crazy to see. I mean, I was writing about the Spurs today, and I was looking, you know, just at basic Spurs headlines, and they're all about how the Spurs are planning on pursuing Durant just as, you know, hotly as the Warriors are doing it. And, like, the Spurs are in a series with the Thunder. Like, it's tied. Like, we shouldn't be talking about what's going to happen this summer necessarily, and yet there's this, like, it's interesting. I mean, Durant is such a fascinating player, too, because you could plug him into any sort of system, and it seems like he'd be great. And yet, at the same time, the Thunder, it's sort of hard to see a system there at all. And so, like, as, you know, sort of as humble a dude as he seems to be, and then also as incredibly versatile and skilled a player as he seems to be, for as long as he's been in the league, it's strange to think that it's hard to know how he would, you know, function in an offense like the one that Brad Stevens runs or like the one that the Warriors run. I mean, I'm sure he would be great, but so much of what he's done has been that sort of, like, that dual isolation thing that he and Westbrook do. And that's, like, not, you know, an especially modern way of playing basketball relative to the stuff that we see from, you know, the Celtics or the Spurs or the, you know, or the Warriors.
We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. Of course, in New England, Larry Bird walks on water still, but was he at all justified in making a coaching change and getting rid of Frank Vogel?
I wouldn't have done it. But, yeah, I mean, that's anywhere you go. I mean, obviously, I know better than to say anything bad about Larry Bird on the radio in Maine. But I also feel like, you know, he's got a track record, I mean, of success there. But he's also the guy that let Rick Carlisle go. I mean, like, you wonder who is good enough for him at this point. Like, not to say that Frank Vogel's in the same universe as Rick Carlisle, who I think is the second best coach in the NBA, you know, and a genius. But it's strange to think that, like, you know, you look at that team, and if I don't know what any coach could have done in, you know, one season with the lineup that Bird gave him. And it's not to say that the Pacers are bad, or that Bird did a bad job putting them together. I just think that they pretty much bumped up against their ceiling, which is, you know, as a pretty decent team. But, like, I don't know how you look at that roster and are disappointed that they're not in the Eastern Conference Finals.
David, before we let you go, I want to get away from sports for a moment and talk about this bizarre political season, because I enjoy your commentaries on that as well on social media. Doesn't matter who you like, but who's been the most bizarrely entertaining figure on the political scene so far this year?
I mean, it's in a way that has nothing to do with politics, and I'm not going to, you know, whatever. I don't need to say who I'm. No one cares about the endorsement of the internet sports writing guy. But I mean, I'm fascinated by Trump, but I'm also at this point almost maybe a little bored by him. Like, I sort of liked him, not to say that. That's a weird thing to be, like, hipsterish about, to be like, I was interested in Trump before everybody was or whatever. But But 2 years ago, when he was on Twitter late at night, just like firing off insults at Bette Midler for no reason or whatever, I was like, get a load of this guy. Like, this is amazing. And now I would love like just a week off. Like, maybe he could just go to the Vineyard or something and hang out, and we could all just talk about something else. Like, I'm kind of, it's triggering. Anytime you turn on your TV and that guy's big blaze orange face is looking back at you and he's like yelling at you about how he has the best cocktail shrimp on his buffets or whatever. It's just like, it's exhausting almost at this point. Absolutely. Do you have any other, I mean, who else could it be? Like,
Cruz was entertaining, but nobody's got anything on the Donald.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, Cruz is fascinating because he's so uncanny that, like, he really just sort of looks like, it's like in Men in Black where Vincent D'Onofrio's, like, in that alien inside of Vincent D'Onofrio's body. Like, there's something about him that was just, like, kind of, with Cruz, it was, like, a little off-putting there. Like, it was, like, somebody who had watched many hours of television to learn how to talk but had never actually met a person before and then was somehow rolled out there and was speaking to 1,000 people in Indiana.
That's the perfect explanation.
I would have felt worse for him about the way it ended if I didn't think he was such a nasty man.
I'm with you completely on that. David Roth. David, great having you back on the show. We appreciate it. Let's do it again before too long.
Right on. Thanks for having me, dude. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.